This is the son of PCJ.
This is London. This is London.
The Voice of Russia World Service.
This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing on.
This is the Dutch World Broadcasting System in Hilversum, Holland, with a relay transmission via Bel-Air in the Netherlands Antilles, directed to New Zealand.
This is Radio Prague, Czechoslovakia.
Ici Radio Canada. This is Canada.
Bonjour à vous si vous nous rejoignez sur Radio France Internationale. Il est 5h à Paris.
This is Radio Ukraine International.
This is the English program of Radio Deutsche Welle, Germany's international broadcasting service.
Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette McQuarrie and Keith Perrell.
Hello, friends. It's very nice to have you with us once again on the program. Coming up today, we'll be joined by Jan Hoogt, the Director General of Radio Netherlands Worldwide, who will tell us about the challenges facing the station after it was announced their budget of 46 million euros will drop to 14 million, a cut of 70%. We'll also hear from the Canadian Minister of Industry Canada about a court ruling to allow more competition into the Canadian telecom market. Media Network Plus, we promise your brain won't crash. But to begin, Paulette McQuarrie now joins us for a look at some of the news from the world of media. Paulette?
The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is funding a community radio network in Africa. It aims at breaking down linguistic barriers between rural communities while improving their communication with decision makers. The Pan-African Radio Platform pilot project connects broadcasters in Ghana, Senegal, Uganda, and Zambia to give local communities a stronger voice in national development. The Gates Foundation is funding the program through the Panos Institute of West Africa. At its launch on Friday, July 22nd, the Institute's Director General, Diana Senghor, said the project aims to improve communication between decision makers and their constituents. I think community radio is the only means for ordinary people to have their say, especially in local governments without radio stations, she said. Arabic satellite channels have defined the story of the Arab revolutions by providing around-the-clock coverage and commentary. That hasn't happened, however, in Syria, where authorities have banned the international media. But a London-based satellite channel, Barada TV, has been able to circumvent the Syrian authorities. Australian Broadcasting Corporation correspondent Elizabeth Jackson asked Malik El-Abda, the chief editor, how the station began.
Well, it began in late 2008 when a group of Syrians from inside Syria and also from the expatriate community decided that they really want a TV channel that expresses the people's opinions freely without any government censorship. So I was one of the people from the beginning. And we sought funding for this new channel. We got funding and we began work on it. And then the channel was launched in April 2009.
Describe for us what your studio is like.
Very small. I mean, the number of employees we have at Barada is about 10 people and one part-timer. It's a very small setup, extremely small studio. It's a virtual studio. So it's really very, very modest. And viewers can tell when they watch us that this is a very low budget production, but we more than make up for it in terms of our content, our bravery in terms of dealing with a lot of issues relating to Syria, especially with what's happening now in the country and the revolution that's almost entering its fourth month now.
Tell me about the material that you broadcast there from that tiny studio. Do you get material from YouTube, or do the Syrians themselves somehow upload their videos directly to you?
Some of the videos are sent directly to us. I mean, ever since we've been broadcasting a daily 2-hour live show, we've had a lot of viewers. Our viewership has really skyrocketed inside the country. People watch our channel to get the news of what's happening in Syria and also to get opinion and also to call in. So we've got a very strong followership in Syria. And for that reason, people now trust us that if they send their recorded material, that it will be broadcast. So part of the footage is exclusive to us. Part of it obviously comes from YouTube. But I mean, you say it comes from YouTube, but we know who are the people who are processing these videos. These, I would say, activist news agencies now that have been set up. There's about three or four big ones. And we know the people behind them. We know who they are. I mean, we trust the footage that goes through them because they have a very high standard in terms of authenticating those videos.
That was ABC Radio National's Elizabeth Jackson speaking with Malik El Abda from Barada TV. And finally, Greece's first Macedonian language radio station will start broadcasting soon. According to representatives of the Macedonian community in Greece, a broadcasting permit has already been awarded, and it is hoped they'll be able to transmit news in Macedonian soon. The two neighboring countries, Greece and Macedonia, are locked in a long-standing dispute over the use of the word Macedonia. Greece does not officially recognize the existence of a distinct Macedonian minority on its territory.
Well, thank you very much, Paulette, and of course a special thank you to Andy Sennett at Radio Netherlands Worldwide on the Media Network blog for providing the stories used. You can find a link to them by going to www.pcjmedia.com. Scroll down towards the bottom of the homepage and you will see a link there for Media Network. And by the way, you're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio. And this is the first time our program is carried on the World Radio Network. So a special hello to all of you listening right now. Media Network Plus will air on Saturdays to four different regions. The times are the following. From 10 to 10:30 UTC to Africa and Asia and the Pacific. From 13 to 13:30 to Europe. And from 21 to 21:30 to North America. You can find out all the details and the channels and satellite information at our website, www.pcjmedia.com. And in North America, we're carried also on Sirius XM and in Europe on Digital Sky. The next few months will be very difficult for Radio Netherlands Worldwide. Beginning in 2013, Radio Netherlands' budget will go from 46 million euros to 14 million euros. That's a cut of 70%. The editor-in-chief, Rick Renton, said, "Our country wants to be known as an important and reliable trading partner. Radio Netherlands Worldwide is contributing to this in 10 languages around the clock. Tens of millions of people all around the world consider RNW an important source of information and the Netherlands' journalistic calling card." And then he adds, "Is our country really retreating behind the dikes?" So what does this mean for the future of one of the most respected international broadcasters? Well, to answer this question and others, we're now joined by Jan Hoogt, the Director General of Radio Netherlands Worldwide in Hilversum.
You're listening to Radio Netherlands Worldwide, broadcasting via satellite and streaming audio via the web, rnw.nl.
Radio Netherlands has just been hit with a dramatic budget cut of 70%, going from 46 million euros to 14 million euros. But before we get to that, when did you find out that the Radio Netherlands budget would be reduced? Was this before the general election last year, or was it right after?
Well, technically right after, because after the election, an administration is put together, which put down their own coalition agreement, and in that coalition agreement was taken up that public broadcasting as a whole, of which the international broadcasting, i.e. RNW, is part, was to be hit by 25%. This is late 2010. It was clear that there was going to be a fairly substantial cut in public broadcasting funding as part of a fairly substantial cut in all government spending, because as all countries, we also have been hit by the financial crisis. So therefore, government spending has to be reduced.
Now, just to explain to somebody who may not know, how does Radio Netherlands get its funding? Do they get their funding from one specific government department or from various different government departments?
No, in the Netherlands, until about a decade ago, knew the system of license fees, where everybody who owned a television set had to pay a license fee. And all this money was put together, and from the funds thus accumulated was paid the But domestic public broadcasting, which is three television channels and five radio channels, and the international broadcasting, who by and large received about 5% of the total income. Then this license fees have been made part of taxes for efficiency reasons, and this budget was run by the Ministry of Education and Culture. And media is part of that ministry. So it was the one ministry that financed both domestic and international public broadcasting.
Now, before the big budget cut hit Radio Netherlands of 70%, Radio Netherlands had been very busy to come up with a contingency plan to reduce the budget by 20%, which was submitted to the government. What happened to it? Did it just fall on deaf ears? Did nobody pay attention to it?
I have no clue. We haven't had a response. Well, as I said, the general cut on public broadcasting was 25%, so R&W, being professional and responsible as we are, said, okay, we'll take our share, and this is how we propose to do it. And we wrote the plan, and we submitted the plan, and we've never heard anything since. So my summary in English would be that this is more politics than policy.
Well, that actually leads me to the question then, because, you know, people around the world have been seeing a political change in the Netherlands. There's been some politicians that have said publicly that they should do away completely with Radio Netherlands. One of them is Geert Wilders. Do you really think that this cut towards Radio Netherlands was politically motivated?
Well, it was political decision making. That's all I can say. And it's not for me to discuss or even try to guess politicians' motivations. But what I do know is that it has been a political decision-making process in which this has been decided among the parties that constitute the current administration. And since there is little vision behind it, or actually none whatsoever, it indeed seems to be given or caused by political motivations more than policy motivations.
Now, this cut of 70%, if speaking from a personal view, I mean, this is not a cut. This is almost like an annihilation of the service. When did you find out about this? Was it when Parliament was going to vote on this, or was the information leaked beforehand?
This is no. Lots of leaks have been happening beforehand, but they were all contradicting each other. This came out in the open basically some 5 weeks ago. 5 to 6 weeks ago, just before Parliament had to vote on it. And as part of the total 25% budget cut on public broadcasting expenditures.
But 70%, going from 46 million euros to 14 million euros, it makes me wonder, what can Radio Netherlands do? I mean, that's not just, say, 20 million euros, that's 70% of the budget.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to answer that question in detail first and foremost because we don't have the answer yet. We will be discontinuing, which basically we proposed ourselves, our tasks for Dutch-speaking people abroad, which was about 25% of the overall budget, both production and distribution. And for the remaining part, we'll have to now set up, and we are working on it as we speak, a set of criteria in terms of how do we define the criteria we need to use in order to make decisions on target subject, target areas, and target distribution platforms. Because you do know one thing, if you become as small as we seem to be becoming now, you need to focus. So as well the number of languages and regions as the number of themes and subjects we specialize in and we focus on, will have to reduce compared to the current day situation. But what they will be has not been decided yet. We are working on that, and it'll take probably two more months.
Now, recently, a number of international broadcasters have had big cuts. There's been the BBC World Service, Radio Deutsche Welle, which is substantially reducing their target broadcasts overseas. And recently, the BBC said that they, you know, with the cuts that they've had, they've lost more than 18 million listeners. Is there any idea of how this will impact Radio Netherlands?
No, I can't say that yet because we do know what we achieve now. But as I just said, we have to still make decisions on what will be our focus, both in terms of regions and languages, as in terms of subjects and content clusters in the future. So therefore, I will not know, I don't know yet what will be discontinued, so I don't know yet what will be lost in terms of audience numbers.
If we take radio in other countries, say Canada or the United States or Britain, in the Netherlands, how do politicians view Radio Netherlands? Do they just view it as the international service, they're talking to people outside the Netherlands, and we don't really care?
Well, those are two questions at the same time. The first has to do with what do they know, and more people know R&W for its Dutch broadcasts because they have used them or have listened to them or have even seen them through our international television service than about the other languages. But the politicians that deal with R&W, the ones that are responsible for the decisions, are very well aware of what R&W is doing nowadays and what is achieving. So by no means it's caused by a lack of knowledge or misinformation. It's a political priority, and what you see nowadays, certainly in this country, is that the focus is a lot more inward than outward.
Since the new budget's going to be kicking in 2013, is there anything that could be done now? Can this decision be reversed, or can alternative funding be found to at least not make it have an impact like it has had?
That is, again, two questions, but the first part of it is relatively unlikely to get this decision reversed or whatever. And of course, administration may fall tomorrow over whatever little political issue. But at this point in time, that is in this country fairly unlikely for electoral reasons, because the current administration would not have a majority if there were to be elections right now. So therefore, they will make sure that they keep together. The second one is additional funding. What we will be doing is, as I just said, we'll set up a set of criteria in order to define what free speech, because that's our core mission, free speech, independent journalistic information, what that is, how we see that, and to what kind of choices that leads and decisions in terms of what we do, as I said, in terms of content areas and so forth. After that has been clear, the core of the organization will be there, and then there will be at least the opportunity, and we will look into it, whether or not additional funding, be it public, be it private, or additional partners, be it public, be it private, are an option to see whether we can do more by creating more resources. But that, I don't want to paint rosy pictures, by no means will be to the extent where we are now or even half of it. So not on a large scale would be the short answer.
What was the response that you had from listeners around the world when it was announced that the budget would be slashed by 70%?
Mostly surprise, also anger to a certain extent, and a lot of reactions by, of course, what does it mean in detail? Because we don't know yet what will be the future organization. It's not that we're going to cut one or two languages. We do have to sort of develop from scratch, zero base, so to speak, a new organization. So for some of the audience, it's not clear yet whether the content or the programs or whatever they are using or consuming will be there. But surprise and anger would be the most reactions from the audience.
So I take it next, you're going to be coming up with a contingency plan to what's going to happen over the next 2 months. Is there any areas that are priority to not cutting?
Well, we as I said, what we'll do also in order to have a clear policy and an explainable policy and a policy that is not just the preference of my editor-in-chief or myself or any other of the senior staff, we will be drawing up a set of criteria, and by using those criteria, we prioritize the content clusters, the subject, so you want, the themes, if you want to, the target areas and languages and distribution platforms we will be using. So there's no priority area at this point in time. We will do the process really step by step to make sure it is explainable, to make sure it is quantifiable, to make sure it's objectifiable.
Graaft en draaft met geweld om ons goed en ons bloed.
And I was speaking there with Jan Hoogt, the Director General of Radio Netherlands Worldwide, talking about the massive 70% cut to its budget, which will be implemented in the year 2013. You're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio. In Canada, the federal government is battling its licensing agency and the federal courts over allowing a newcomer into the Canadian telecommunications market. On February 4th, the federal court overruled a previous government decision that allowed Canadian wireless operator GlobeLive Wireless Management Corporation to offer mobile services. Then, on February 15th, the Honourable Tony Clement, Minister of Industry Canada, announced that the Stephen Harper government would be appealing the court's decision. He speaks next to our own Paulette Macquarie.
Well, actually, the first ruling on this was done by Industry Canada, which was then overruled by the CRTC, which in turn was overruled by the federal cabinet. So that's the course of events that led to the court challenge. Our position is very clear. We feel that on a legal basis, the GlobeLive, through its operations in Canada, meets the test under the Telecommunications Act as a not foreign-controlled company, that is to say a Canadian company. It does so because most of its shares are owned by Canadians. Its board of directors is not controlled by foreigners. And finally, its day-to-day business management is operated by Canadians. So on all of those tests, it meets the Canadian test and the Canadian standard. What's important is the intention of us moving ahead with GlobeLive, as well as other new market entrants, is to provide Canadians with more choice, more competition, better service, better pricing when it comes to wireless. And that's the whole purpose behind the policy that underlies why GlobeLive is active in the Canadian market, and that's to make sure that Canadians have more choices when it comes to choosing their carrier.
Okay, but that still doesn't really answer the question. What did the CRTC see as foreign ownership that prompted it to deny the license on that basis?
Well, I certainly wouldn't want to speak for the CRTC, but my understanding is because GlobeLive accessed foreign capital in order to do their build-out, that this was the thing that they found to be contrary to our laws. When I look at our laws, it's a matter of day-to-day management and control. It's a matter of who's on the board. It's a matter of who owns the shares. And on all of those indicators, the company was Canadian. So there is a disagreement of legal opinion. Our point of view is that we read the law properly, and that's what we're taking to the Superior Court, appealing the federal court lower decision. But I think probably what's more important to know is that the whole basis of why we're in this argument in the first place is not about foreign ownership versus Canadian ownership. What we're trying to do is open up our wireless sector to more competition, more choice, better availability, better service for Canadians who tend to rely on wireless these days. So I think that's the important thing to keep in mind.
Okay, so we don't want to say that it's political, but it actually is political.
It's not political. We're looking at the law based on legal principles. Okay. But the principles behind why we're into this argument in the first place is, as a matter of public policy, we believe more competition is better than less competition. More choice for consumers is better than less choice for consumers. And that's what the whole thrust of our opening up new spectrum to new entrants was all about.
Mm-hmm. Now, I read an RCR Wireless report that last October said in Canada, three big players accounted for about 21 million of some 22 million wireless customers.
Mm-hmm.
This in a country of 35 million that has one of the highest cell phone rates, if not the highest, in the world. Now, by contrast, Taiwan, with a population of 22 million living in a space the size of Vancouver Island, has six carriers and a seventh coming on board soon. As a result, Taiwan residents enjoy much better service and considerably lower prices than Canadians. For example, my colleague in Taipei gets G3 service for the equivalent of $18 to $20 Canadian a month, and for an extra $12, he gets internet connectivity for his mobile phone and iPad. Now, in Canada, consumers pay more than double for similar services, probably around $100 a month. Now, your government has stated that it believes competition is good for the Canadian telecommunications industry, as you've just told us. The three big industry players, however, namely Rogers, TELUS, and Bell Canada, disagree. And what's your response to them?
Well, our position is clear. We want to see more competition, more choice. That's why we specifically reserved part of the spectrum that was auctioned 3 years ago for new entrants that the incumbents, Bell, Rogers, Telus, were not allowed to even bid on that spectrum, that it was for new entrants. And that's why we have GlobalLive and Mobilicity and Public Mobile and Shaw and Quebecor. They're all in that space now, busy building out their networks and offering service. If we hadn't have reserved spectrum back in 2008 for new entrants, none of this would be possible. So we've taken a very, I think, the right posture on this. We want to see more competition. We want to see more entrants. We want to make sure that Canadians have more choice. And that helps everybody. It actually means that the incumbents have to be sharper in their practices, and I mean that in a positive sense, sharper in the sense that they have to provide better quality at lower prices to Canadians if they want to compete. So I think that that's what we are all about, and that's why I continue to be faithful to that policy.
That was Canada's Minister of Industry, Tony Clement, speaking to our own Paulette McQuarrie. And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of Media Network Plus. You're always welcome to contact us. Our email address is very, very simple. I mean, really simple. It's as easy as counting to 1, 2, 3. That's if you can count, of course. Our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. That's mnp@pcjmedia.com. And you're more than welcome to send your comments, suggestions for upcoming shows. Next week on the show, we're going to be doing a special. We're going to be looking at radio jamming from China and the former Soviet Union. And that's on next week's edition of Media Network Plus. You can also take a listen to all the past shows by going to our website, www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus. Or just go to our website, pcjmedia.com, and click on the link for Media Network Plus. On behalf of our technician, Kevin Lee, our production assistant, Johan Backer, this is Keith Powell wishing you all the best 73s and 88s to the ladies.